Thanks, Ashley, for arranging this reading. I appreciate it, and I appreciate having the opportunity to read for you all. I will begin by prefacing briefly what the poems I will be reading are all from a manuscript in progress. The title of the manuscript is The Bruise of This, and it's a manuscript that has evolved over the last couple of years in response to the AIDS crisis. All of the poems, they sprang out of the past 2 years of my life, and I've been putting the poems together since then. And they are, I found that they started tracing a narrative about two men. One was sick and dying, and the other one survives. And the poems are all spoken in one voice to the person who is dying. The first poem I'm going to read is the first poem in the manuscript, and the title of it is How I Was Told and Not Told. There was the milky sun washing out the sky, and his hair fanned out on the pillow above the drunk and muscled crush of. In the room, the knife had left its mark, ashes in a saucer, burning amber in a glass, the slow ribbon of news slipping out. The husk of his voice hangs in the morning air, and outside, the wind starts its hurling, left lingering, a fossil is the shape of him in the empty bed. The needle punctures the vein to consider the blood. No trace left of the body's perfect red moon. I am alarmed by the weight of objects and the way light is consumed by the greedy sky. In sleep, I have already heard the ruffling of papers, the dry movements of insects, the tray of utensils, bright clatter, chime. I lay down my want of him like a lock of hair in a cedar box, and the moon with its bone sliver and loose stitches of black bases up the night sky. On open. Look at it. The season's shifting. I can see it from this slice of window, the fires smoldering on the hillside and the smoke rising up in feeble questions. A dark house in the distance ignites its one tinny light, and I think of light and the way it can come too close like an enemy or ice. Outside, the wind sings the way a door sings on opening, and all day the hammer tap in the next room is a heartbeat, sealing in the blood, then giving in, hungry for zero. I must tell you how willingly the body will empty itself of itself. Cancer coils in a distant cell. Blue veins snake to a quieter place, while the night's single white sheet stretches out, wrinkledless, chilled, the snowfields boarding their empty white bowls. Listen to that whisper. It is the lungs casting in and out. A spidery black spot clings to pink. A number of these poems are inspired by hospitals and by hospital imagery. This next poem is the title poem of the manuscript, and it's called The Bruise of This. The night I woke to find the sheets wet from you, like a man cast up on the beach, I hurried you off to the shower to cool you down, dressed you, the garments stripped and awkward in my hands, and got you into a taxi to the hospital, the driver eyeing us from the slim disc of his mirror. The the blue tone of the paging bell, the green metal beds, plastic chairs linked in a childhood diagram of infection. And when they wheeled you by, there was a needle in your arm, the bruise of this already insinuating death. And rather than watch gloved doctors handle you in their astonishing white coats and crisp ties, I took a seat outside and waited, time yawning out, white and static, a hallway, a bed sheet, and made clear to me in the bright light of speculation was time's obstacle in the body and those things I could do that might cushion it. To sleep in a new city. This is medicine's hollow miracle, that we have cost it. So intent is the doctor, what he knows is a thing to be envied, it is that strong. Tell me, he says, when did the pain start? What I like most is how clean the room is, all the drawers sliding smoothly, the heavy curtains white as ash, the corners of the floor sloping so even the smallest particle can be swept away. In dreams I've had, birds flutter and chop their wings like flames, a moon crest pale and dumb as a dinner plate, and I drive out of this city, which is black and crumbled and lit with vacant specks. Behind me in the mirror is the glow of it, huge and cumulative. A match lit that will end it all, a globe of breath blowing smoke. What I drive toward is a new city, one in which your body does not wait, because this road dividing the night in half, and the trust I've put in oily machinery, this doctor's puzzling, assures me the world does not pause for us. This next poem is a longer poem, and it was the first that I wrote in a series. And I wrote it, I guess, it's 2 years old now. It's written in sections that have different forms, and it was my attempt to use form in a poem to capture a lot of different kinds of information. And I wanted the different sections of the poem to be flexible. I didn't want it to be static. I grew up in a very small town in Wisconsin, and that showed in this. I moved, after I lived in Wisconsin, I moved to New York City, and one of the things that's always been of interest to me is that progression from a small town to a big city, and the kind of tension that it creates in people's lives associated with that move. The title of this poem is Snow, and each of the sections has a different subtitle. The Visit Home. It is not yet light in Wisconsin. The day's seven pale hours bow in the distance, the sky an upturned bowl. From the window, I see where a deer has pawed through snow for apples, buried deep under a crust of ice. Downstairs, Father rattles the coffee pot, while the television flickers with war in Yugoslavia. A woman with a bundle, a tank cutting through snow. At the cathedral, lights flicker in red cups underneath a gold leaf icon. Lips move, but no prayers are said. There is the smell of tobacco smoke, frankincense, cooking grease, while hope goes out silent onto the ice. The dream. DNA chains spiral upward, linking the body's promise with this bloody failure. A friend begs, take care of me, while I walk the street, a narrow chamber, my pace like a ventricle flapped open, then shut. I scour the filthy sky for a route, a hole I can slip my body through like a bone. In Brooklyn, when I try to concentrate, I see only details. Snow coating the wires linking house to house, the way the old woman on the street folds and refolds a slip of paper fluttering in her hands. Is it a list? A diagnosis? Glass breaks in the alley while the blue clock in the kitchen begins to buzz. The noise is clutter's loose sister and rises up around me like someone else's life. My mother sends articles clipped from the home newspaper. Rare albino deer killed on Canada Ridge. Viola Went, dead at 72. I'm writing lists, sounds I would never miss. 1, glass breaking in the alley. 2, merengue through the floorboards. I peer into the mirror at my face and its cluster of bones. 3, the squeal of the medicine cabinet door and the dull click of its magnet. I have been given a bag of clothing to me because he was a Jew and I Gentile, and his family could not keep these lingering shapes of their dead son. To say it happened by accident is to deny its significance. We had spent the afternoon putting on mud masks, plucking stray hairs, buffing our skin, manicures, the bathroom bright as day, and when he stepped into the shower with me, I could only notice the way water pooled in the pocket of his collarbone and slipped the fine blonde hairs in a V down his back. It has begun to snow. I can no longer see out my window nor down the tight V of the street that empties into the water. A snowplow cuts a path, scraping by, and I put on a jacket that will never be my own. The answering machine picks up a call from my mother. Honey, are you there? Please pick up the phone. I light a candle near the window, the acrid smell of a match gone out. Wind bumps against the pane, and I notice the blue afternoon shadows lengthening. In my dream, there is no one I can answer. There are too many sounds I would miss. Elegy. Of the delicate pocket of his collarbone where water pooled, and of the dim crescent under his eye. Of fine blonde hairs, the channel of his forearm, of muscle, of bone, and of semen. And the day marked off with clouds, blunt as horses. Of shadows lengthening blue on snow, and sleep's impress in the empty bed, of confusion and of pity, and the telephone's dark click as the receiver is hung on its rest. I'm going to read a couple of new poems that I have been working on since being here in Tucson. So they are quite new. And they still, they are part of this series, and although I can't help for there to be some things for Tucson of working their way into the poems. This next poem was my attempt to write an argument. I wanted to write a poem that was less image-driven and more rhetorical, and I found that that I kept going back to the image rather than the rhetoric. But the title of the poem is One Explanation of Beauty. Everywhere the material world is speaking to me. The cry of a door, or the floorboard is growing with the slightest pressure of a foot, or the pear tree blooming on the avenue, its cells bursting and multiplying, the kindest thing I know. Here in this world capital, a new version of beauty reveals itself, one of action and people shedding their lives like skins. A fury recalcitrant as an animal circling its bed, too stubborn to go down. In my heart, its dumb fist pounding in me now, I know what you are saying. That calm and stasis are beautiful, like horses with their platters of muscle and wet eyes. That inactivity, a window to look through without opening, the permission to touch no thing. That an image of the city is better than the city itself, with its crude happenings and pain. My choice has been made for me, for this life with its immeasurable velocity, because cities and their images burn, darling, and lives like ours shatter like houses in a desperate wind. But here, I will leave you with this, because I know you will love it. A horse, her bowed neck gleaming white and rippled, picking through wet grass toward a looming grove. Nothing to wear. After the pain has left you and is clear, the glass lid lifted up, the mail sorted, the single letter's scrawl opened and unread, the phone taken off the hook, floor swept, keys twisted in their locks, the rags wrung with gloved hands, the shirts, those lingering shapes hung on wires, your dark suit left to loiter in the closet, the papers in their lumpish stacks, my active ignorance of the world's cruelty, mapped in shadowy ink. Forget the dishes, forget the rooms where you once labored or found sex just for today, just this one time. You're forgetting, oh God, fabrics now, the ridiculous vinyl of a pair of red shoes, soft leather of a retro jacket you once slipped yourself into when that was possible and always gorgeous, before stepping out into the damaged, once forgivable night. And this one is so new, I may change it while I read it. it's called Peonies. In the yard, peonies burst their white hearts, scalloped edges unfolding only for themselves. Their simplicity, the blade of it, cutting the morning. In this Brooklyn of yards haloed in razor wire and laundry flapping like flags of surrender, clouds of rosin smoke drifting up to these windows, traveled shadows of the smoker's lungs, I watch the police helicopter menace the neighborhood, its engine hooking together manifold locks and keys. Even now, in the face of this sickening, there is forward movement, American needs forcing my hand, each day a pearl strung on a weakening line. The last time I saw you, I held my hand over you while you slept, imagining heat rising in green and red as in a photograph of heat, your body giving up its one treasure. There is such savagery in this neglect, muscle strain, fluid failure, the flesh receding from bone until we are left with the indelible print and fracture, the cells of us snapping in a survivor's brain, like grainy pictures, the only way it will last. I brought you peonies, pink, like a shell, like a heaven, a mouth, an infant, an infinity, a crisis, an end. I'm going to shift gears slightly. I have two poems in the series that are about that feature one of my favorite things, which are drag queens. I have a true love for them. I think that they are drag queens, and dragging is some of the bravest and most wonderful things in the world. And these two poems, I should set the stage a little bit. The Roxy is an enormous gay bar in New York, and it used to be a roller rink in the 70s, which was who knows what, in the 80s, and in the 90s it was converted into this enormous club, which is a sight to be seen. And there is an image in this poem of men wearing kilts. And it was very fashionable for a while for men in clubs to wear these extremely short kilts. And the title of the poem is Take Good Care of Yourself. On the runway at the Roxy, the drag queen fans herself gently but with purpose. She is an Asian princess, an elaborate wig jangling like bells on a Shinto temple, shoulders broad as my father's. With a flick of her fan, she covers her face, a whole world of authority in that one gesture, a screen sliding back, all black lacquer and soprano laugh. The music of this place echoes with the whip crack of 2,000 men's libidos, and the one bitter pill of ecstasy dissolving on my tongue is the perfect slender measure of the Holy Ghost, the vibe crawling my spine. Exactly, I assure myself, what I've always wanted. It is 92. There is no you yet for me to address, just simple imperative. Give me more. Give. It is a vision, I'm sure of this, of what heaven could provide. A sea of men, all muscle, white briefs and pearls, of kilts cut too short for Catholic girls or a Highland fling. Don't bother with chat just yet. I've stripped and checked my jeans at the door. I need a drink, a light, someplace a little cooler, just for a minute to chill. There is no place like the unbearable ribbon of highway that cuts the Midwest into two unequal halves, a pale sun glowing like the fire of one last cigarette. It is the prairie I'm scared of, barreling off in all directions, flat as its inhabitants' A's and O's. I've left Wisconsin's well-tempered rooms and snowfields vacant as a bed I wished I'd never slept in. Winters, I'd stare out the bus window through frost at an icy template of what the world offered up. A beauty that if held too close to the body, I'm sorry, I messed up. At an icy template of what the world offered up, the moon's tin cup of romance, and a beauty that if held too long to the body would melt. If I'd felt anything for you then, it was mere. The flicker of possibility, a quickening of the pulse, when I'd imagine a future not here, but elsewhere. The sky not yawning out, but hemmed in. In her dress, the drag is all glitter and perfect grace, pure artifice, beating her fan, injuring the smoky air, and in the club, I'm still imagining. Decks of speakers burn and throb. Whole cities of sound bear down on us. I'm dancing with men all around me, moving every muscle I can. The woman's voice mixed and extended to a gorgeous black note in a song that only now can I remember. One familiar flat stretch, one wide open vista, and a rhythm married to words for what we still had to lose. This next poem, which also features drag queen, one of the two, is called Through an Opening Door. And it takes place on 14th Street in Manhattan, which is kind of it's an interesting place. 14th Street runs east to west, and it divides two police precincts. And what will often happen is on the far west side by the piers, by the water, there's a lot of prostitution. And it's a particular kind of prostitution involving transvestites. And rather, if police see if there's a problem going on there and the police don't want to deal with it, they'll simply push the problem into the next precinct so they won't have to deal with it. And it's this sort of no man's land where crime is sort of allowed to happen and terrible things happen to people. But the police just kind of keep batting the ball back and forth across the net through an opening door. On 14th Street, the vendors push their ragged brooms and sweep each bottle's empty headache into the gutter and wash it away. Blocks west of here last night, a drag queen of unfailing commitment strode up 8th Avenue, arm raised to hail a cab, her coat splayed out behind, oily wings. It was 4 a.m., the tender hour, when the boys in the bars, paired off or spent, slink home to sleep off chemical bliss, my own hours of recovery moving toward me like a slow blue bus. In daylight, you'd not recognize it. This place, the meat packers, the Spanish speakers hunting frothy buttermint dresses hung from delicate hooks behind glass, plastic shoes, reptilian imitations nosing out from racks on the street. You'd not imagine the backroom frenzy of the night, the boy bent on getting me off, his mouth a dark harbor, his eyes rolled upward, two blue beads. In the morning, I'll recall only a bit of this, the way the blue beads from the necklace recall the neck, the hanging drape of hair. Night's all about the blurring of detail. But no chemical can better history. Free this bit of you hooked into me like a stitch, or blur this scene played out in the shut box of my heart. You rising up from the bed toward a new beginning through an opening door. The drag on the avenue can't get a cab. Her fear and the driver's suspicion speeding in opposite directions. Face fallen. Ankles turned slightly outward in their heels, leather underthings concealing just enough to keep everyone curious, who turns toward me as I watch and says, "Baby, you just give yourself away." I'm going to read a couple of poems from a series of poems. During the course of writing these, I found that the poems kept getting smaller and smaller, and I kept paring them down more and more and making them pointier and sharper all the time, and it got to the point where I was afraid I would just sort of do capital letters and punctuate, and that would be sort of it. And so I spoke to my thesis advisor at the time when I was in grad school, and she said, "I'm writing these poems and they're getting smaller, and I don't know what to do." And she said, "What's wrong with that?" You know, she didn't see the problem. She said, "Well, why don't you write something big and sloppy?" So I turned to prose, and I decided that I would write a series of prose poems, thinking that I would end up paring them down and, you know, sort of putting on the gloves and pulling out a sonnet or something. But they ended up being staying as prose, and they sort of took the form of letters. Again, these take place in New York for the most part, and a few scenes. And I liked writing in this form because it allowed me to contain things and put information into the poems that I never thought possible. And so, anyway, this first one is called Unmade Bed. You remember the billboard of the unmade bed on Lafayette IV? It's finally down. It peeled and faded, and last week they took it down. The city changes like that after so much of the same. Things get erased or gone over again. 3 days ago, I read about these men who steal cows. Curious. They don't take them alive, but bring a truck into the pasture and slaughter the beasts right out in the open in the middle of the night. They pack the meat, cut in rough shapes, and leave the hides and innards, bones, for dogs to scrap over and haul to dusty yards. Farmers wake and find nothing left, their fences cut wide open, a gaped mouth in the morning, the field empty. Went shopping with C and spent an hour finding her lipstick. It was so important, just the right shade, you know? We kept smearing them on the backs of our hands, little cosmetic bruises, turning each tongue down its silver throat, dozens, each wrong. I have this tissue with her lip print, perfect Russian sable, not too much brown, but not garish, and I promised I'd buy her several if I ever find a match. And me thinking of the panels of your body pinning me down, your hair. I haven't had it that good since. I saw a doctor. There was a lecture I could have done without, but I'm fine, so don't worry. When they took the blood and I saw the 3 vials on the counter, little jewels, so red, I could almost see the cells colliding, galaxy. Forgive me. There will be more mornings, I know it, waking alone. A print the size of me in the bed, when laundered and pinned on the line, is gone. Chapel of the Miraculous Metal. C calls to tell me Mercury is in retrograde, so watch out. Just last night, walking up the subway stairs at 14th Street, some guy reaches under her skirt and grabs her. You see? The whole city isn't. Who was that guy? What a jerk, she says. And that apartment in Chicago, 3 rickety stories up, the man across the street bearing himself to me every morning at 7, and again evenings at 6:30, waiting for my light to go on. His glassed-in wand, a naked torso behind the window. I never saw his face, just the activity. So necessary, not even distance or geography could prevent him from gesturing. In Paris, there is a convent on the Rue du Bac, where the body of a saint lies under glass, resisting decay for a century. The nun stubbornly holds on to form, waxy hands clasped over her heart, an insect in amber. I can barely write this to you. There was a boy. At a bar, he spoke to me, so young, mistaking me for someone younger, and groping him in the corner, his soft mouth on mine. I swear I'd forgotten how it could be so necessary. I left him there, whispering in his ear, touching his shoulder, and hurrying back to my empty rooms. Extraordinary how these things come back. I was walking along the piers, all the men on rollerblades, the orange sun dipping down orange-red into New Jersey, and I was back in the attic room I rented from Rose, that was her name, calling upstairs to ask if I'd like a tomato. She must have had an extra from the garden, and when I opened the door an hour or so later, it was nested in my shoe, red, as big as my fist. One perfect thing left there, just for me. Came on after I drove across country for the first time. I drove here, actually, a summer ago. And anyone who's ever made that drive has, of course, had to go through Kansas, which is, you know, I thought, of course, at one point I was going to lose my mind, that it was just... But what I found more than that, I found myself back in this really flat big, open page of a place, and I panicked. I found it completely terrifying. The title of this poem is No Place Like Home. On the Kansas highway, I see children being useful, driving cars. 12 or 13 years old, boys mostly, peering over dashboards and pickups with rusted wheel wells and gravel on the floor. At a stop sign in haze, I catch myself staring at the tan bear arm hanging out of a truck window. We are landlocked. The sky stretching out above us is huge and useless. I look up at this boy, at his brown face and wheat blonde head, and my heart catches and I panic. In rest stops all across America, men are waiting in cars for sex to happen to them. The burning cities of their radios glowing, the voices ringing out like instructions for a new route home. There is that altitude that happens after sex, a heady chime like crystal, and thumbing their vinyl steering wheels, I imagine the men hear it too. I've stopped to read the graffiti on the bathroom's beetle-colored walls. A crude phallus points the way to an empty stall, and dates tell of dozens of afternoons spent, parked under a low tree's blunt canopy, eyes peeled on the soda machine, waiting for no one. When did it all begin? I spend the evening staring out the motel window, a man gone thin and unhappy with diligence, my fear of this place generous. At the grocery, the woman at the checkout smiles, and I see something familiar in the way her grin pulls at her eyes, slipping my carton of milk in a bag and handing it over, a secret between just her and me. I pay and walk outside, gun the engine, drive out on the empty strip. The Kansas moon is just big, its opaque grin all dumb and clumsy. This is America, tricking me. Beetles clustered with harvest, dust roads trundling off at perfect angles, and signs proclaiming unbearable roadside attractions, helping me recognize what doesn't fit in. Of course, the unbearable roadside attraction of that poem is the world's largest prairie dog, which you'll see advertised, which I did think paying an advertising group for $4 to see. And it was the size of a basset hound. I recommend it if you're driving. I'm going to read two more poems. The title of this one is In the Winter of This Climate, which is a line lifted from a poem of Adrian Rich's, the poem that she wrote in the late 60s. Anyway, that's the title of the poem. When I dream, it is of sheep tangled in the marsh, their calls growing faint and the light failing. Or winter's handful of piano notes against the highway's salt hiss. Nothing stays at home forever. There is the house I go back to, long since torn down, and your footsteps walking the same five rooms the day the men were frozen in their boats when the weather changed and a storm blew in from the east. There is the sky filling with the same dim stars, the night birds fanning in the trees' icy ribs, and you knee-deep in the river's motion, hand cupped to your head, an upturned palm filling with rapid blood, your voice loose of its short tether saying, do you hear it? Do you hear what I'm trying to say? The last poem I'm going to read is called Suture. And again, this is in reference to a childhood spent in relative isolation in Wisconsin. someday you will leave this town and not look back. And for now, you keep hurtling toward the red center. The road unfolding. The ice raining down in crystals while the bridge heaves itself onto the bank. River of mud. River of sad, oily pleasures. Where a kingfisher cuts through the water's brown skin, clean as math, and you want to say, this is like logic, but something fails you. Listen to the unforgivable birds piercing cold sky and singing like needle and thread, and for the scar splitting your eyebrow. You remember the doctor tying his knots, don't you? This is always yours, the shadow of an animal, smell of newly shorn wool, the workhorse pawing air and stomping in his stall. Somewhere in the marsh, crest sharpens green in the age of stunted miracles. Do you know how to get there from here?